But all right.
Yeah, it's first, first liar doesn't stand a chance in this place, so what the hey. Boy, we've got quite a little show lined up here today, don't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir. As always.
As always?
Yeah.
Not always.
Well, some are better than others.
Some of the guests we've had have been kind of duds, haven't they? Or do you think they're all good?
They're all good in their own way.
In their own, I like that. Was a good. You'd make a good politician. You know what the hey?
You're very distracted. What are you doing?
I am studying as we. I was wanting to see that picture right there. You know, that's an awful nice picture. 271 inch whitetail deer, which is over at the expo.
Yeah,
it is. Right. Paisley's over there.
Paisley's over there. I want. Uh-huh. I want to shake her hand.
She's a very nice lady.
Is she?
Yes.
Cool. Well, anyway, it's. You were there yesterday at the expo?
Yeah, I was. They had a good turnout. You know, Friday's never a ton of people there, but according to the people that were there last year, it was a lot better than last year. And, boy, you got to come out there and meet Michael Waddell. I mean, it's worth going. He is the nicest guy.
Nicer than me?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he is. But Eddie Salter's there. He's a good guy, too.
Oh, he's a class act, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's the best turkey caller I've ever heard.
He is amazing. I was with Joe Falco, Sportsman's Outfitter and Marine, and Eddie Salter is right across the aisle from us. And, you know, he's calling all day.
Oh, yeah.
He's just amazing. Yeah. Good guy. But Michael, I'm telling you what, he's just the most down-to-earth, humble guy you're ever going to meet for a big star, you know.
You know, we interviewed him last weekend, and he said, they're not my fans, they're my friends.
That's how he treats you.
And that's
absolutely
the way he treats you.
There is no doubt about that, yeah.
Yeah.
And I watched him the whole show meeting people, and it's exactly like you said. It's like he's meeting friends. And, that's worth the price of admission. Go see those guys.
Did you see anybody that was intoxicated at the show?
No.
That ain't going to be a good show. I mean,
they did sell cocktails and beer there.
They do?
Uh-huh.
I did see Waddell's partner, T-Bone, and he was out fishing.
Really? No way.
Yeah.
Wow. Took his leg off, ladies and gentlemen, above his knee.
Yep.
The darn old cancer got after him. Yep. What's his prognosis? Anybody hearing?
So far, looks good. Looks good.
They say he's got just a great sense of humor, and his attitude is off the charts. And that's so important, but... I think it was Michael Waddell told him they're going to have to get some kind of super prosthetic for him because he's still pretty heavy and going to be have to have some special material to hold his weight up.
Put a hydraulic cylinder on it or something.
Right.
You know, I got to spend a little time with him last year at the show.
Right.
And he was hurting so bad then. And we sat back over in the booth, kind of out of the limelight. He was in so much pain. He was having back trouble at that time. And I've got pins, bolts, nuts, and screws in my spine, so I know what back trouble is, and I felt so sorry for him. You know, one of those guys that got up and go get it, you know, type guys, you know, and he couldn't. And he was just down and out, but he still had a real good attitude, and it made me laugh, and I mean...
He's a special guy.
That whole clan, you know, is just... Bone Collector series has taken the world by storm. You know, I mean, you drive down the road and somebody goes by with a Bone Collector image thing on the back of their windshield or sticker and their bumper or whatever. And they have, and you know, he started out, you know, very humbly and built that into a brand, which is an uphill battle if anybody knows about that, you know. So it's been tough. So what the hey? What's some of the highlights? What's going on out there? What are you doing?
Well, a lot of hunting stuff, not quite as much fishing themes. Although there is, I think there's some people with trips to Canada, and we've got Phil Taunton, with our friend from What's in Outdoors. He's got a great booth. It's the Outdoor Communicators booth. Got a lot of kids' activities over there, and they had a great turnout yesterday for that.
Good.
The kids are over there. They can do they've got this casting contest. They've got these plastic fish on the floor. And they would cast a little stopper of some sort. They cast it, and then they'd reel it up, and you can hook these fish. And each fish has a prize that you can enter and win. And it was really popular. A lot of kids doing that. We've got the roundtable discussion today, a roundtable on a straight table, a roundtable discussion on a straight table.
Sounds like they're very apropos.
Yeah, we'll be. You're going to be there today.
How many prizes did you win yesterday in that cast?
How many did you win?
I wasn't there yesterday.
You
I was
wouldn't at, win one of them if your life depended on
probably
it.
Not. I was at a birthday party for a 95-year-old lady.
Well, that's wonderful. Who was that lady?
Her name is Betsy. She's a Stevens College grad. She lives next door to my mom.
Wow.
And what a wonderful lady with so many stories. Yeah. Huh.
95. That's my mom's 95. She'll be 96 April 5th.
And they have happy hours every night in the community. I'm not kidding you.
Why not? At that age, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, giggle and laugh, you know, what the hey.
My mom has vitamin C every night with a wine cooler.
Must be working.
Yeah, mixes a little bit of two fingers of sangria and then tops it off with a wine cooler and her powdered vitamin C. Yeah. Best way to get your vitamins.
I had a gentleman, he's dead now, but he was 90-something, and he'd take a shot of whiskey before he went to bed. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, at that age, you're going to hurt yourself too bad, I would think, on the deal. So what the hey, you know. Oh, well.
It's too cold to fish out there today, so come on out to the Overland Park Convention Center and come visit us.
It's going
to
be fun.
Yeah.
The bass tank is there.
Yeah, that's where our seminar is set up, right by that tank.
By the tank.
Yep.
We'll
be doing that at 2:30 today.
At 2:30.
Yes.
So we're on at 2 or 2:30?
2:30.
2:30. We got to be there and smile and looked intelligent. That could be pretty hard to do.
Yeah. You're a good actor, but I don't know what that good.
Yeah. You know, I was telling Kelly on the way down here, I talked his ear off, but I've been with the BBC guys all week.
Oh, yeah, right.
10 days of them, and kind of like fish, you know, after so many days, they get a little old, but these guys didn't. It was the most enjoyable 10 days of my life.
Hmm.
And they're funny, and they're good, they're articulate, they're professionals. They brought a helicopter in, and we flew all over the northwest Missouri, basically filming snow geese. And you ought to see some of the footage, guys. Hmm. You fly right up alongside some of these snow geese.
Oh, wow.
What was weird about them, they'll let you fly alongside of them, but if you try to get ahead of them a little bit, they don't like that, and away they go, you know. But they got some of the most unique footage that you've ever seen in your life. And while we were in this, it takes 7 months to edit the show. It will air about this time next year. 440 million viewers worldwide. And it's not about, it's, they show us killing some birds. And it's not a documentary about hunters. It's not anti-hunting. It's the part of the equation is the management of the flock, you know, taking the breeding pairs out and that kind of thing. There's 13.8 million snow geese in the stratosphere.
Wow.
And if Mother Nature would have had it in balance, be 3,300,000.
That's way out of whack.
So they've come to the hunters to, you know, eliminate this problem. It's not working, you know, maybe taking 10% of the flock or less. But it's a step, you know, it's the right way. And if for people that have never done this, this is a hoot. My boy, you can go to our Facebook if you guys want to book a ultimate. And now the juveniles are there. Ooh, boy, are they dumb. I had one come in 10 yards, missed him three times, loaded a gun, turned around, came back at the end of his career finally. But, you know, gee whiz. And this is a hoot. Unplugged shotguns.
Yep.
No limit. Half hour before sunrise, half hour after sunset. And it's, you know, you can kill. You know, there's days those guys kill 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 birds, you know, in the deal.
Wow.
And, you know, take the meat out and grind it up and mix it with sausage. Ooh, you want a moment alone with it. You know, it's really, really good. So if you've never done this, I highly recommend it. And go to my boy's Facebook page or our Facebook page. He's scroll down there a little bit and he'll hook you up to get on a hunt of a lifetime. So, and some days, you know, it's called hunting. Some days it's not very good. It's kind of like fishing. Some days not very good. Some days it's worth it, you know. But what I've noticed this year is that there was a good hatch in the juvies. So the adult birds are pretty darn hard to. They'll go over top of you. It'll be hundreds of thousands of birds go over top of you, and all of a sudden one of them will be, get stupid and come down, and they usually drag two or three or four or five in with them, you know, on the deal. So, it, but they are educated. Some of them birds 17 years old.
Oh gosh.
And so they've been there, done that, seen that, yeah. Been shot at. But they only get shot at August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April, and May. So they got June, July to kind of rest and recuperate, yeah. You know, the deal. So what the hey. Well, I'm pumped up about this deal. About being, I want to go shake hands again with Eddie Salter. He gave me a Black Shadow diaphragm turkey call. And, you know, that's one of the perks of the job. You walk up to somebody and they're always giving us duck calls or something, you know. And I started up I-29 after he gave me that Black Shadow, and I got up there by the rest area there, and I popped it in my mouth, and I pulled over in the rest area and yelped on it. That's how good it was.
Wow.
You never heard a sound like that come out of a diaphragm. If you're a diaphragm turkey caller, a lot of people use slates and boxes, but I only use a diaphragm, and this thing is orgasmic. I mean, I wanted a moment alone with myself up there with that turkey call. Ooh, ooh, it was good. What's the fishing like below the dam? Any walleye?
Yeah, there is. There's some showing up, and there's a few hybrids and a few crappie. It's starting to get good. And it's that time. I mean, they're moving up there. And if it's just a little variable because of water fluctuation. You know, if the days they're running water is definitely a lot better. And, you know, with this precipitation, maybe they'll be running a little bit more. But even without it, I'm hearing of a few being caught, yeah.
Cool. Yep. We got Dr. Reese.
Dr. Reese on. And he's got a booth over there. He's not there, but Brett Moreland and some of his crew are over there.
What's their booth? What are they?
Acute angling. And yeah. He does South American cichlid fishing, cat fishing, down in Brazil and in those areas. And... you know, do you want to get your information from somebody sitting around at a bar drinking a beer, or would you like to get it from a person that has a doctorate in South American cichlids?
Cichlids.
Fish. Yes, a peacock bass isn't a bass. It's a cichlid. Peacock bass was just named for the American sales.
For the show.
And it worked.
It worked very much so.
Yeah. Peacock bass are a mean, vicious animal.
Yes.
They take your lure and they bite it in two.
Bite it in two, pull the split rings off, pull the hooks out.
Take the gears out of your reel.
Yeah.
Other than that, they're a fun fish, huh?
Johnny Morris sent down 200 reels to another camp that I know of. He was going to design a peacock reel. After 2 weeks, 180 of them were sitting on the table in the meeting room with the gear stripped out of them. 180 out of the 200.
Crazy.
Wow. I suppose I need to get my sponsor in here, the KingCityLumberCompany.com. If you've not been to their website, you're the last human to walk the face of the earth that has not been to their website. If you need an outbuilding, Kelly, they built a garage on your property, didn't they?
Yeah. About 10 years ago.
Does it still look okay?
Oh, yeah.
Door shut and everything? Oh, yeah. Okay, there you go. There's a live testimonial.
I would build another one of these days if I ever get the chance. So.
Yeah. They're good people, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Straight-up deals.
Yeah. You call them, they'll be right there to fix it.
So. Yeah. Anything breaks, they stand behind it 110%. And on their website, if you don't see the building they have your dreams, they'll help you design it. They'll help you build it. They'll tell you exactly what's going on. So these are the people, Marty and Monty Tunks, are the nicest humans to walk the face of the earth, and you need to be friends with these guys because they're a special kind of breed. But anyway, KingCityLumber.com. Got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm Mark Tobin, along with Waterfowler Hall of Famer and my partner in crime, Mr. Fred Ramsey. We also got a full studio in here today. We got Greg Thompson, and who are you?
I'm nobody.
Ain't nobody. That's a New Point flash. That's Kelly Kurtz. You ever been to New Point, Missouri?
No, I have not.
Can you believe that?
No, everybody ought to be at New Point once.
What was the general store there?
Lentz's General Store.
Still
standing.
Yeah. You used to have to go in there and spit and chew and had wood stove and you spit and go psh.
Well, joining us on the phone, what a pleasure and an honor it is to introduce our guest. He is an expert on a lot of things, but especially one of the most exciting fish to catch in the world, and that's peacock bass. He's Dr. Paul Reese. Dr. Reese, thanks for being with us. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing? And it's my pleasure to be with you.
Well, I wish we were out fishing in Brazil, but we're stuck here in
this
10-degree weather.
Yeah,
right.
over at the show today, actually, if you would like.
Yeah, right.
He has a booth there, Acute Angling.
Well,
that's right. We're at booth 503, and two of my genius experts, Brent Moreland and Zach Porter, are manning the booth and really can give you all the information you might ever need.
And what are they doing there? What trips are you setting up there?
We have seven different trips. We run four different mechanical operations that allow us to get to different parts of the Amazon. We have a floating hotel, we have a mothership operation, a floating bungalow operation, and a lodge up in the mountains. And we use these to access different fish at different times in different regions. And it gives us a sort of a menu, if you would, a continuum of seven different trip types, starting with trips that focus on great numbers and evolving into trophy hunt trips and finally ending up with trips that are focused on all the river monsters variety.
Wow, how fun.
Ladies and gentlemen, you need to go to our website and Midwest Outdoors and look at this that you posted on here about these guys. And you sit there and watch all these different fish come across the screen that these guys have caught, and different colorations and patterns and weird-looking species is all there is to it.
Well, disclaimer, I'm an unpaid spokesman, but Paul Reese, I'm actually going on his lodge trip this fall, but of all the operators that are still down there, Paul Reese is the only one. Acute Angling is the only one I'd even go with. They're very trustworthy. They've got it down to a science. They're the best. They're absolutely the
best.
What's
a paca, Doc? What is that?
Well, there are a lot of common names for all animals, and in Brazil, peacock bass, the species we fish for, Cichlidtimensis, unlike the smaller species that have been transplanted in places like Florida, Cichlidtimensis goes through a once-a-year color and pattern change.
Wow.
And it changes from what used to be called the three-bar peacock into what used to be called the speckled peacock. Back in 2006, I published a discovery that they were, in fact, the same fish going through this change. But the common names for these two variants, if you would, paca is a description of the speckled form, and asu is a description of the three-bar form, one and the same fish.
Now, the paca is a certain time of year you can only catch it, and then that speckled, it's so pretty. It's such a pretty fish. Is it just certain time of year?
Well, it isn't certain times so much as it is certain times in the fish's life history.
Okay.
Every year, the Amazon goes through a flood pulse. It's, in effect, a once-a-year tide, where rivers will rise 20 to 50 feet above stage.
Wow.
So instead of there being a river, there's a 20-mile-wide floodplain. The fish are in the forest. And life changes dramatically for these animals because everything becomes diluted. Hunting bait fish now becomes a major challenge. So their color and pattern becomes more cryptic. They're camouflaged. So this dark brown speckled fish is moving through water that's getting light coming through leaves and looking a lot like the water it swims in. Gives it a better opportunity to hunt under difficult circumstances. When that tide retracts or when that flood pulse ebbs, the river returns. The riverbank shows back up in the floodplain, and everything is now forced into a surface area that may be 1/100th of what it was during the flood. So as you can imagine, bait fish now are concentrated. Peacocks are feeding aggressively, and as they fatten up, add on weight, and change into a form that's ready to spawn, they generate these brilliant colors, the three-bar pattern, and now begin to prepare to spawn. So there are always peacocks of both forms available when you're fishing for them, because we only fish once that water drops below banks full. And during that time, some fish are more rapidly successful in gaining weight, others more slow in reaching that point, but they all begin to make that process. So when the water first comes down, most of the fish are in the pocket form. When the water hits bottom and there is no more room to drop, most of the fish are in osu form.
Osu. We mean three bar. Is that what that is? Osu.
That's what that is. Yeah. That's the color you see most often in photos, because frankly, they're easier for anglers to catch. They're focused on things that put them in our purview, like displaying for females, like building a nest, like guarding their babies, whereas paca are busy hunting and feeding, and they're not all that interested in our little plastic and wooden feathered things.
Like my co-host here. He's not interested in it. But he gets that barred look every once in a while. I go, uh-oh.
Dr. Issa, is it true that I was told that when we were fishing for peacocks, that if they get spooked and they have any of their younglings around them, that they'll gulp them into their mouth to protect them?
No, it isn't true. They are not mouth breeders or mouth protectors. The way they protect their young, in fact, is what makes such an attractive form of catching them. After a spawn occurs, the male will guard the babies. They cluster around his head, and he swims out of the nesting area, which typically is in shallow water and may be shaded and protected, swims out into the middle of a lagoon where he can let the young graze, and they graze on plankton, on small zooplankton that's eating algae, which in this dark tannic water only occurs at the surface. So that male is sitting below this little school of babies that are nibbling away at zooplankton, and they are often threatened by predators. There's a fish that commonly scoots into a group of babies. It's called peshikashohu, and it'll skip across the surface, grab a baby, and go. The male's reaction is to try to crush this thing. So when we throw a big prop bait and drag it through a bunch of babies, this male's reaction is to kill it. He's not eating it. He is just killing this thing and protecting his babies.
That's why it's such a vicious bite.
Ugh.
And there's nothing like it, nothing like a topwater bite from a peacock bass.
Oh, unbelievable. Again, you guys are in booth where?
We are in booth number 507.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I had the pleasure of talking to these guys last year. It was a pleasure. Man, this is a trip of a lifetime. It's no way to describe it. It's not that expensive, as far as I'm concerned, on the deal, you know. But boy, you need to stop by that booth and see these guys and book a trip. Are you booked up for quite a while?
Some of our trips are booked up going 2 years out now. We've had quite a reaction to people being released from home prison, I guess is the right word. And so some of our trips they're very popular to begin with. But now, for example, our early season trip in the Agapowasu Indian Reservation is booked out into 2024. Some of the others still have some available space, but selections are now becoming a bit tighter.
I will
say one correction. I said booth 507. It's booth 503. My guys will be really angry at me if I send people to the wrong place.
That's all right. They'll look down there and see it, I'm sure, on the deal. So
one interesting thing you all have is you all furnish all the tackle, correct?
We furnish everything, actually. This is a completely all-inclusive trip. So the minute you book with us, we buy you an insurance policy for the full value of the trip. You don't have to go out and buy travel insurance. It's included in the price. we give you a global rescue subscription in the event that there's ever somebody becomes ill or needs to be extracted. They will come get you and bring you all the way home. And knock on wood, that has never been needed, but it's there. We provide all food, drink, open bar, boats, guides, rods, reels, everything down to the lures, even the fishing license, wow. And for most of our trips, the permit to enter indigenous territory.
Well, the thing I bring up about that is, for a person that hadn't gone down there before, he doesn't have to go spend $600-800 for tackle to go down there. He can just get his clothes and hop on.
Yeah, jump on, get down there and get down there. Yeah. Dr. Reese, we have radio time here, and we have to get out, but I appreciate you taking time out of your day to be a part of this. Go by 503 at the Expo. You're going to enjoy talking to these guys, I will guarantee it. You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back with you.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Midwest Outdoors. I'm Mark Tobin along with Fred Ramsey. We've got Greg Thompson and Kelly Kurtz there in studio with us. And joining us on the phone from Acute Angling, we have Dr. Paul Reese. Dr. Reese, we've been talking about peacock bass and fishing in Brazil. Has COVID changed travel plans? Is it more difficult to get to Brazil or fish over there than it was before?
Yes and no. COVID changed everything, of course, for all of us, and it's not made life any easier anywhere. But bit by bit, things are coming back. We fished this entire season fairly successfully in terms of travel and logistics. In the beginning, it was really difficult. You were forced to fly to Rio or Sao Paulo or Campinas, which took you 3.5 hours south of Manaus, which is where we want to end up, and it forced you to fly 3.5 hours back. So it made for a long, rather distressing 24-hour travel time. As of December 1st, United Airlines and Copa have come back to flying a route via Panama City, which took 12 hours off the flight time. Oh. And now it's a pretty smooth connection. I'm flying down in the first week in June. We have our team meetings and our planning sessions, and I'm flying down. It's an 11-hour round trip, and I'm leaving out of Newark Airport in New Jersey. So it's a long route, and it's quick and easy now.
Okay. Doc, we talked about this a couple of days ago, but one of the interesting things about this watershed is that there are pre, post, and spawning fish all at the same time. Is that correct?
That is correct. They each react. Each individual is more or less efficient at moving from that paca stage to that asu stage. So all forms of the fish are generally available. Early in the season, more paca. Later in the season, more asu.
What time of year do they spawn?
It's not so much the time of year, it's the time of water. That's a ridiculous phrase, but what happens is that dry season, that point where the rivers begin to drop again after the flood pulse, it moves through the basin counterclockwise. The Amazon basin sits just south of the equator. So Coriolis forces, those are the forces that drive weather and that drive the way water circles in a toilet when you flush it. We've all heard that story. But those forces are reversed south of the equator. So the dry season rotates counterclockwise in about half the basin at any given time. Our fisheries are in an arc, or sort of in the central part of the basin, in the Rio Madeira Basin, Rio Negro Basin, Brazil's Guiana Shield, and the San Gabriel region. It's about an arc of 1,250 miles. And that dry season moves into our southern fisheries in late June, early July. But we're risk-averse. We don't start fishing until late August. And then our operations are mobile, of course, and we get behind that dry season. and we follow it right through the basin until we run out of basin up against the mountains in the north. The rains come there in May, and we tend to quit fishing around mid-March again, giving us a good buffer between the seasons we want. So we always try to be in the point where the river is just below banks full to just at low. We don't like to sit there when the water is at low and not moving. We want to always be in that dropping water quadrant, whenever possible. Of course, we don't control weather, but we do control our movements. So that lets us be in the right place at the right time. So that spawning point can be in the south in August and in the north in March or April.
Wow, cool. You know, one question I've got to ask you, because it was last time we had you on, I got asked this question. And so I said, well, we get the doc back on one of these days. I'll ask him, has anybody or any time felt unsafe fishing with you guys? Have you ever had an incident where there's a warring faction or a tribe or somebody to be scared of?
No, never. Realistically, you got to look at it this way. We collect people at the airport. We bring them to a fancy hotel. The following morning, we put them on a float plane and take them generally to an Indian reservation. If you want to be a bandit and come and find us, you need to charter a float plane.
Okay.
Which, what's the point of chasing us down? It costs you more to fly there in the first
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
Once we're in our place, we are the cash cow in these reservations. Let me put it in a better way. We've created a social contract with these tribes.
Yeah.
We've improved their quality of life. We're an important component to the way they live it now, and as a result, we are well taken care of.
Ladies and gentlemen, you want to talk to these humans that are representing out there. They're booth 503 at the expo. Please come out and visit with these guys. Might change your life.
Oh,
you know,
has mine. I've been down there 39 times.
Yeah.
Dr. Reed, what is the time frame that you can fish when the water is right like that?
Well, the water will be right in some regions at different times. So we begin fishing in late August, and we stop fishing in mid-March. So any time within that, the water is right somewhere, and we've moved there. One of our operations is, of course, our lodge is not mobile. So it has a very short season, and it fishes only October through February.
Ladies and gentlemen, come by and see him, booth 503 at the expo. Doc, thank you for getting out of bed and joining us here on the air. We appreciate it probably more than you'll ever know. And I think it could be a life-altering decision to go down there and have a giggle.
There's nothing like it. I mean, you definitely got to put that on your bucket list. Definitely the funnest thing I have ever done is catch peacock bass. I know there's maybe some stronger fish out there, but there is nothing that I've experienced that hits a topwater bait. Like a peacock bass. They are a hoot.
I'm fascinated by the coloration of them.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful fish.
Beautiful fish. And one you'll probably have to have mounted and put on the wall.
We're getting a reproduction. That's what I did, had a reproduction.
They're breathtakingly beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and when you get on our website, Midwest Outdoors, and you'll see the pictures of these fish, you just ooh and awe over them on the deal. So, Doc, thank you for being part of this.
That's my great pleasure. Always happy to talk about my favorite subject.
Yeah, exactly. So what the hey? I hope we send some humans down to fish with you. That's what I look forward to. So thank you for doing this with us.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir.
Okay.
All right,
you all have a great day.
Okay, buddy.
It's Acute Angling, booth 503 at the Open Season Sportsman's Expo. And it's too cold to go fishing today, so come out there and join us out there at the expo.
Tobin, it's never been too cold for you to go fishing.
I know. I just said that.
I know you're trying to. You could be on Tanikomo.
Yeah, right. I've been on colder.
You know, I've been talking to some guys been fishing Tanikomo. They're very disappointed.
Yeah, it's been. Mm-hmm. I'm hearing mixed reviews. It was terrible when I was there. We did better at night than we did during the day.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hearing some fish being caught here this past week. But you know, it's with the cold weather, they run more water, and when they're running water, the fishing's better.
Yeah.
But when I was there, they'd run water in the morning for a few hours, and if you weren't out there then you just didn't do very good during the day.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other report I'm getting from Tanikomo, is the fact that quality of fish is up.
Yeah, that's true. The quantity is definitely up, but the quantity seems to be
down.
Lacking
quality,
a little.
Quality's good and quantity's down.
Yep.
Not a deal. So a lot of big fish.
Yeah.
Not a deal.
Yeah.
Kelly Kurtz is in here in the studio with us, and it's a hard act to follow Dr. Reese, Kelly. I don't mind telling you. But, now, talking about too cold, he was up the other day. What lake were you guys fishing?
Well, depending on what day it was, we were in up around the South Dakota area. We were fishing, one lake was 3,000 acres. It's called Bitter Lake.
Bitter Lake?
Yeah.
36 inches to cut through the ice?
Yeah. We had 36 inches of ice.
That's hard water.
You're
right. There you go. Right is hard water, isn't it? What, did you take a chainsaw and get down through
there? Yeah, we have a 40-inch bar on our chainsaw. And
man, that's...
We had a 36 on it, just would barely get through. And if you don't get all the way through, then you got to chisel the rest of it. So we got a longer bar. But, yeah, it was thick. That's the thickest ice I've seen up there for a couple years.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I guess my thoughts is it scare the snot out of them fish when you're cutting the hole down.
All that
there.
Noise?
No, it doesn't bother them a bit. I mean, we've opened the hole and dropped the decoy down within... 2 minutes, you'll have a fish in. So
now, explain that. You say decoy, and a lot of people, I had no idea what that was till you sent me a video of what that was.
Yeah, we suspend a wooden decoy that looks like a minnow, or red and white's the hot color up there, which is, you know, around here even a red and white's. But you drop the decoy down into the water, whatever depth. We're usually, this time of year, we're 9 feet of water, and we drop it down about 6 feet, and you just leave it set there, and you'll yank it. It's finned to where it turns. If you yank on the line, it'll spin back down. And that movement draws those northern in, or any fish. It's legal this year for the first time that you can spear any species of fish up there that come in the hole.
Is that right? Yeah, really?
Walleye and northern and bass and
you're
Chinese.
In 9 foot of water with 3 foot of ice.
Yep.
That's insane.
Yep.
And he brought you some to eat.
That's what I hear.
You don't think they'll thaw out in the truck, do you?
Not today.
Not today. So they get right after and chase it? Is that
what
you
they'll come up and hit it. And actually, I mean, they'll hit it hard, and they back off. But a lot of times they'll just slip in real slow. Like, they're just a curious fish more than anything. It's just an attractant. And we'll put live minnows down also, but they'll sweep in and get them so fast that you
don't have a
usually
chance.
Miss them. Yeah. But
we got a video. Did it come for you on the show where the guy was ice fishing and pulled a perch out, and the northern followed the perch out, clear out on the
they
jumped out of the hole.
When we dressed those fish, we had one the other day that had an 11-inch walleye in it.
Is
we actually
that
measured
right?
it. Yeah.
Oh wow.
And they'll have a smaller northern in their bellies. Anything that moves in front of a northern, they'll eat.
Can people go up there and book these guys to fish and stuff? Or not?
There's people out there. They're called snow bears. They're an ATV on ice with tracks, and they have guides up there. But most of them are anglers. They go after the perch and the walleye, and so, you'll catch them. But.
So the walleye chase this plug too, and you can gig the walleye also?
Yeah, we spear walleye this year for the first time.
Hmm. Let's go.
Yeah. Anything that comes in the hole, you can spear it. Yeah. This is the first time that they've done that. They've opened it up. North Dakota has done it for years. South Dakota, this is the first time.
The Y-bone. Now, that's what everybody asks me every time I say something about northern, but we can't get the Y-bone out of them. And there's a way of doing that, isn't there?
Yeah. You got to know how to fillet them.
Yeah.
There's a technique to it, but we get them all out. They'll zip right out of there.
It's an art. It's an art, but it's pretty cool to watch somebody knows what they're doing.
We do it all with electric knives, and it just takes just a little bit to do it. We dress a lot of fish, so.
36 inches, 20 inches, what do they weigh?
We don't take anything under about 4 pounds. I speared one there last month that was 43 inches long.
Wow.
I took him to the taxidermist. He's getting mounted.
I would think so.
43-inch northern.
Now, we've got to settle the old argument here. Everybody says which is better to eat, walleye or northern. What's your thought on that?
Northern.
Oh, you didn't hesitate.
He didn't, did he?
Not a bit, no. We eat them both up there, and I'll take the northern over the walleye anytime.
Is it a sweeter meat or what?
It's got its own unique flavor, about like a carp and a channel cat. But it's got a little bit of a fish taste, but not a lot. It tastes like fried shrimp to me when we cook it. I really enjoy it. The walleye's got a good texture, and it's a sweet meat, but the I really, the northern taste is just above and beyond anything.
Wow. All my Canadian friends would answer the same.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. And
have you know the difference, Mark? Have you eaten both?
I have, but I don't. I never had them side by side. I know that the northern that we did have. Now we would do that. We do a shore lunch and have northern. And of course, shore lunch, you're halfway starving anyway, and everything tastes better. I love it. Yeah, absolutely love it. Yep.
Well, the locals up there, they're just a nuisance fish to them. They're like carp to a lot of people. They'll throw them up on. They just hate them. Those guides up there, those anglers,
they call in Minnesota. They'd call them, or Canada. They call them snakes. The guides that we were with.
Yeah. Slick snakes is what. Yeah. Oh, get those slickers out there. They always say.
Wow.
Yeah.
We used to actually when we went up there walleye fishing, we had a deal where if you caught a northern while you were walleye fishing, you had to sit down and drink an entire beer before you could get back
up
the fish. Yeah, but we were drinking Canadian beer.
I'd be targeting the northern.
No doubt.
Mass quantities of beer to go fishing.
And you cannot get that slime smell off of you. I don't care what you do.
I'll be done. But I wonder why they must be really good to eat, huh?
I think they are, yeah. Everybody that I've fried them for, that was the first fish that went.
Well, Kelly brought me some. Of course, he brought me a lot more than he did Mark, I'm sure. You know, we're such good friends on the deal. You know.
They smoke a lot of them, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so hard to find.
Smoke them, anything.
Where do you find wrapping papers big enough for them?
Well, bundle them up. Pack them in tight.
Well, what's the deal for non-resident to be up there? Non-resident fishing license? That's
non-resident fishing license with a habitat, and they've raised it. It's $125 now for a year.
Yeah.
Runs from February to February.
Sounds like a good deal to me.
Oh, it is. I've been up there four times this winter. I've basically lived up there, it seems like. So,
out of St. Joseph, Missouri, it takes you 3 hours, six hours.
435 miles from my driveway to Webster.
Webster, South Dakota.
That's where I go, yeah.
What goes
on? The home of Brock Lesnar. If anybody knows Brock Lesnar, that's where he was born.
Anybody know Brock Lesnar?
Yeah, I know who Brock Lesnar is.
You do?
Yeah. One of the greatest humans and athletes of all time.
Yeah, he played for the Minnesota Vikings, and then he went into the UFC, and then he's in the WWF. He's on there some. But, he's big medicine up in that country.
Heavyweight champion of the world.
Oh, yeah. Wow. What? How in the heck did I let that slip by me? My goodness. Well, the perch now, I mean, is do they come and go? I mean, all of a sudden here's a bunch of perch and here's a bunch of northern.
They're in schools like crappie. They'll come through. We don't target the perch or the sunnies. They call them sunnies up there. They're bluegill to me, and they look at me when I say, what's a bluegill bite? And they, well, what's a bluegill? And they're called sunnies up there. But you see hundreds of them come by, but they're all, you know, 3-4 inches. We don't see the big perch up there like what we used to, and it's because of the northern population.
Eat them.
Yes, they do. They swallow. I mean, their bellies are completely stocked full when we dress those fish of bluegill and perch.
Wow.
Do they have the striped perch there? They get pretty good size.
They'll get up 13-14-inch perch up there.
Those look like a little walleye with orange fins. Yeah, they're beautiful.
They're
fish.
Very good eating, too.
Oh, yeah, they're sweet.
Well, I was just going to ask.
They're actually better eating than the walleye are, too, I think. But
sweet meat.
Yeah. I'd like to go up there just for that.
Yeah. We very seldom ever get them big enough into the hole to where we can spear them or even angle them. But.
Because they're just not there. I mean,
well, they're there, but they're just so small. But,
so small.
Yeah, but like I say, those guides up there, they target. They go out in the deep water, out in the middle of the lakes, where we basically fish above the weed beds and anywhere. We have speared 20-foot water before. That's where you go after your bigger fish.
Mm. But are they running a depth finder? I mean, how in the heck are you determining all this stuff because of prior fishing trips out there?
Yeah, we go by lake maps.
Uh huh.
And we put down a. Yeah, that's a very nice perch there. Yeah.
So you put down a...
They know where to go. The guys I go with, they live out there basically year-round, and they know the depths of the lakes and what lakes we go to. And we'll switch lakes every other day or every day. If the fishing's not good, we'll go to a different lake. There's hundreds of lakes around there.
Yeah. So, well, 36 inches to cut a hole down through the ice.
Do you use a fish finder?
No, we have, but most generally, no.
You know, Jeff Williams has got a video where they went up and caught targeted rainbow, and they used a fish finder, and they could actually see that rainbow come up to hit their little jig.
Well, I sent Mark a picture the other day of, I can't think of, it's not a live scope. What was it I told you that thing was?
I
don't remember. Anyway, we let it down, and we see the fish coming in. It'll show, it'll get red, and then you can see them coming in, and we know by the size of it what if it's a northern or what it is. But
oh, cool.
But we use it maybe once. If the water's real murky, we'll use it, but most generally it's like sitting there looking into an aquarium. I sent Mark pictures of crawdads crawling across the bottom and stuff. And yeah, it's neat. You just sit there and watch it. And we cut a 4-foot hole in the ice, 4x4.
Do you put a tent up or are you just out there?
Yeah, we're in an ice house. It's got to be blacked out. Any movement at all in there, I mean, you can, if you lean over the hole when the fish is in there, he'll spook. You got to make sure you let the spear head down under the first surface of the water. Because if you make any splash sound at all, those fish will be gone.
No. Oh, really?
Wow. You got to be pretty stealthy about it. Or if you bang around on the floor, they'll spook, of course. But
you were using panoptics.
Yeah, panoptic. Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
Huh.
We just got that this year. The guy did, and it's pretty. It works.
Now, if you spear a fish, obviously anything else around there is going to spook. How long does it take for another fish to come back by?
Oh, sometimes immediately, just because when you spear one, that motion of the fish swirling on there, it'll attract another one. We had seven fish in the hole at one time there this year.
Wow.
They were all just hammer handles. We call them smaller fish, but, we had seven of them in there at a time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sound like kind of fast and furious, though, at times.
At times, it can get pretty crazy. You get a big one on, and then he's wrapped up around the decoy line, and then if you have a live bait, too, it'll wrap everything up, and then you have a heck of a mess.
Yes, wow.
But it's,
what do you think?
Sounds like fun.
We ought to go.
Yeah, we've got to do that.
Webster, yeah. South Dakota.
What's the limit on northern?
Six. Six per day.
So, and what, like 12 in your possession?
Yeah.
Or whatever?
Yeah. And you're allowed one walleye over 20 inches a day, and then it's a four-day or four-limit, and then you can have five bass, 15 bluegill and crappie and perch.
Black bass?
Yeah.
They get speared really? Black bass, too?
Yeah, we had some 5 to 7 pounders this last time we were
really?
Up
there.
Really? Wow. We were catching them on tip-ups, but we spear them also now.
I'd like to go do that.
Those bass are good eating out of that cold water.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Well, what fish wouldn't be out of that cold
water? Oh, yeah, right.
Unbelievable. Well, we're out of time.
That went too quick.
Sportsman's Expo.
Open Season Sportsman's Expo. Yeah, the Overland Park Convention Center. We're over with Joe Falco, Sportsman's Outfitter Marine, and Fred and I will be doing a roundtable discussion at 2:30 over by the big bass tank.
And we're proudly brought to you by Reed Chevrolet. I don't know why in the world I would forget about their commercial, but I did because I got so wrapped up in this. But you're going to need a new pickup today. They're getting some. Not very many, but they're getting some. So go by and say hello to those fine humans. I can't say enough good things about them, too.
Do they have any trucks?
They got a few, and they got a great selection of used right now. So anyway, well, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. I hope you come out to the Open Season Expo.
Yeah.
And
come
we'll
say
be, we'll be giggling around there. And some of the stories we tell are true. It's up to you to separate things. So that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in a great outdoors.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.